The Brian McClanahan Show, episode 177.
Are you ready to think locally and act locally? Welcome to the Brian McClanahan Show.
Welcome back to the Brian McClanahan Show. Glad to have you back on the program. Very glad to be here. Before we get started, don't forget to follow me on Twitter, at Brian McClanahan. Like my Facebook page, at Brian McClanahan, and subscribe to my YouTube page, at Brian McClanahan. Also, you go to my webpage, brianmcclanahan.com. You give me an email address, and I will give you a free ebook, Forgotten Founders, and a free audiobook of the same title read by yours truly. And I'm very pleased to announce, and I announced it yesterday through that email list, I have my latest McClanahan Academy course. It's American Constitutions. It is now out and available for purchase. You're going to want to get this class. I'm just going to take a minute or two to talk about it here. It is the meatiest class I've ever produced for McClanahan Academy. It's 40 lectures, 13 hours of material, covering American Constitutions from the beginning. Essentially start with the classical antecedents of American Constitutions, bring that up to the British tradition, and the English-British tradition, the Anglo-American tradition, I call it, and then I bring that into the state constitutions. We do a detailed discussion of the Articles of Confederation, and I go through the U.S. Constitution clause by clause, and I wrap up the course with discussions of how the Supreme Court has distorted original intent, and I also talk about the Confederate Constitution in a bit of detail as well. So this is a great course. If you're interested in learning about American constitutions, not just the U.S. Constitution, but American constitutions, this really is a course for you. There's nothing out there like it. And so I spent a lot of time on this course, clearly with 13 hours of lectures. It's a great gift if you don't want to buy it for yourself. If you're interested, if you're a homeschooler, it'd be a great course to include as a supplemental class. If your student's in high school and they want to get a government class, but if they want to have a supplemental class on the Constitution or American constitutional tradition, it's a great course in that way. I'm very proud of it. Of course, you can enroll in McClanahan Academy for free. You don't have to purchase anything. If you just go to McClanahanAcademy.com, you can enroll for free. But I've got a number of courses now, not only on the Constitution, one on the war, one on the Declaration, one on secession, and one on Hamilton. So all the classes really work together, and I reference each class in the course. So all of them work together very well, and I think that you would enjoy any of them, but particularly this course on the Constitution. Christmas is coming up. Think about that as a Christmas gift, or again, if you're a homeschooler, something you want to add to your repertoire for your courses for your homeschooled student. And if you're just a student interested in the Constitution in general, it's well worth your time to take this class. All the lectures average about 20 minutes, some a little shorter, some a little longer. So they're great commute size lectures. And I do have video and audio downloads of those, plus the PowerPoint presentations that go along with it. So it is a great course. Please consider purchasing the class. And it does help support the Brian McClanahan Show. That's one of the ways that people ask me, you know, how can I support the show? Well, purchase something from McClanahan Academy. It's how I keep the lights on, partly keep the lights on. You can also support the Brian McClanahan Show by giving a monthly or annual donation. You can go to brianmcclanahan.com/support. You can support the Brian McClanahan Show that way. And I also have my Brian McClanahan Show gear at redbubble.com. You can get t-shirts, all kinds of items, stationery, all kinds of cool things. So stickers, if you go to redbubble.com, I've got all that there as well. Okay, that said, let's talk about the topic for the day. And it's something that I wanted to do a while back, and I just never had the chance to do it. And I'm sure a lot of people out there like to binge watch television shows, and I'm no different. When there's a good show, I like to sit down and watch it. But I've gotten very selective, picky, in fact, you could say, in the television shows that I watch recently. They have to really capture me in a way. And one of the shows, and particularly with shows that are fictional, you know, I do enjoy a good documentary. But one of the series that I found very interesting, and it took me a little while to get around to watching it, and I had to be kind of dragged into it. I'll say that. It wasn't one that I thought from the beginning, oh, I can't wait to watch this show. But it's Downton Abbey. And Downton Abbey is an interesting show for a variety of reasons. And one of those reasons is because of the relationship between the show and the aspect of tradition. And I like this topic of tradition. Of course, I just mentioned that the Constitution class is all about tradition. I love this idea of tradition. And if you're not familiar with Downton Abbey, if you're not familiar with the concept of the show, it actually is a 20th century, early 20th century look at English or British aristocracy. And so it has this, I mean, people watched it because of the manners and because of the dress and all these things. And I think that, you know, the costumes and the look and feel of the show were excellent. I cannot criticize the historical accuracy in that particular way. It's Edwardian England. It's a wonderful look at the life of the aristocracy and servants. You have this back and forth between the life of servants and the life of the upper class in England, and then also in between that you do have some discussion about middle class England and the rise of the middle class. So you have this interesting look at socioeconomic distinctions in England. But some of the things I liked about it had nothing to do with that. And of course, they get into major issues. It starts with Titanic, the sinking of the Titanic, and how that brings about a new heir to the Downton Abbey family. And then they get through World War I, of course, and up into the 1920s. They finish off on the eve of the Great Depression. And so how the life changes over that time in terms of the manners and situation in England or Great Britain with the aristocracy, the lessening of the aristocracy, their power. I mean, World War I did a tremendous impact on these large estates in England. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But the thing that I loved, again, was this this interest in tradition. And in the first season, there were a couple of really poignant comments made by Lord Grantham, who was the patriarch of the estate. In one particular case, I'm not going to spoil the show for you, but a new heir is brought into the estate, and he's of middle class origins. The son of a doctor. He's a lawyer, and so he works. He works for a living. He actually has a job. Now, of course, at Downton Abbey, the English upper class don't have jobs. They live a different kind of lifestyle, and it's one that I'm sure anyone watching the show would think, wow, that would be great to not have to work, and you have this inherited wealth, and of course you can live as a country squire, because essentially that's what you have with Downton Abbey. And if you look at English tradition, and of course the Abbey, the family came into the money that they have in the 1800s, in the 19th century, it's when they really started becoming very prominent landowners. But it's very medieval, in its feel. You know, in the Middle Ages, into the Renaissance period, of course, and forward, one of the things you had were these English country estates. And every time I watched the show, I would think about American history. So I'm going to tie it into that. You had in this particular estate, the Lord Grantham not only owned the estate, but also the town. He was the proprietor of the town. Essentially, the economy worked because of Lord Grantham and because of this inherited money. You had tenant farmers who had their land because of Lord Grantham. They leased it from him. And so this is very medieval in its structure. You would have, of course, the feudal lord, then he would control all the land. And so nothing really, you had some modifications of that, of course, over time. You didn't have serfs anymore, obviously, in the 20th century. But you also had this particular situation in the United States, in New York at one point, for example, with the patroonships. Now, they didn't control entire towns, these patroons. These patroonships, but they did control large estates, and they certainly were, without question, the proprietors, the in essence, feudal lords of their estates. And then, of course, I kept thinking about the South in this particular during this particular show, and Southern estates, Southern plantations, because the same thing was there as well. Now, of course, the labor system is different. In Downton Abbey, you had free labor, but you had this entire structure built on the backs of servants And that was one of the interesting parts of the show. A lot of people liked it because of that, and the interaction between the servants and the family itself, and also the lives of the servants and how they had to live, how they were forced to live at times. You know, the servants, it was unusual for servants up until the 20th century to be married. They were essentially married to the estate. And this was not, I mean, if you go back to France, for example, and look at Louis XIV and Versailles, Louis's valet, or as they call it in Downton Abbey, his valet, was married but never saw his wife. He was essentially married to the king, because his entire life revolved around the king. And you had that also at Downton Abbey. The servants, their entire life, every day of their lives, revolved around the lives of the family. The butler, the valets, the housemaids, the ladies' maids, all of these people were tied in to the family. And I think you can find that that's the case no matter what the situation you had, no matter the labor relationship you had when you had these large estates. And if you go back and you read what Southerners said about their labor relationships in the antebellum period, they at least themselves considered, particularly the house slaves, to be like a part of the family. They weren't, of course. I mean, the slaves didn't view themselves that way, ultimately. The slaves understood their status. And so this is where you get this debate in American history, whether slavery was paternalistic or capitalistic. I think what you find in Downton Abbey was certainly a paternalism that you can also, I mean, they viewed it that way. And Southern plantation owners viewed it that way. They viewed it as paternalism. They didn't view themselves as master capitalists. In fact, they looked down their nose at capitalists, those who were merchants, those who made their living shuffling paper, paper jobbers. In so many ways, and this is the thing that I think you get if you go back and read American colonial history, and you look at cavalier culture, and you look at who these people were, the distressed cavaliers who would come over to the New World and establish plantations like they had in England. Remember, and Downton Abbey gets into this, if you don't know this, you had a law in England called a primogeniture, or sometimes it's called entail. And Abbey, this is why you have this male heir selected in Downton Abbey. The oldest male heir gets everything. The daughters didn't get anything. The next son didn't get anything. They had a title, but they didn't have the estate. You didn't divide the estate up and give, you know, a part to this son, a part to that son. The oldest got everything. And so you had these distressed cavaliers come over to the New World, and they established estates just like they would have had in England. They live the English country life. When you look at English politics and the development of that, you had the court and country party. The country squires, the Whigs is what they were. I mean, these people lived because of primogeniture and entail. Now, of course, that was abolished in America after the American War for Independence, so you didn't have that anymore. But you certainly had people wanting to live the life like they had in England. And so that developed this type of manners and rules and customs and this paternalism that you find that was so heavily important in the lives of these individuals. They viewed it that way. They viewed themselves as the patriarch, not only of their own family, but of an extended family that went beyond their own kin. It extended out to their servants, whether they were slaves or free. It extended out to their servants. This is how they viewed their life. Now, we can look at it again, and Downton Abbey gets into this, that the servants themselves didn't always view it this way. We know slaves didn't always view it this way. So you have these two different worldviews going on. And it's an important to understand that. These people were not, they weren't evil people. They weren't bad people. They were living a life that they had inherited. And I think that's one thing that Downton Abbey really does a nice job with. This is an inherited life, and there was a responsibility in that inheritance to maintain that life for the next generation. There's a few lines in here that I really loved, and one of them was from Lord Grantham, when he essentially called himself a placeholder. It was his job to pass down Downton Abbey to the next heir, and it was the next heir's job to pass down Downton Abbey to his heir. It was a responsibility, a social responsibility, not just to the heir, but also to the family, to ensure that Downton Abbey maintained its prominence, a social responsibility. And there was a scene where Lord Grantham took out his heir, his name was Matthew at the time, took out the heir, and he stops and he looks back at the estate and he says, I'm sure when you look at the estate, all you see is a bunch of bricks, and you look at it and you see a roof that's going to leak, and you see problems with the house. You see all of these things that are going to arise. You see a house. You see problems. Because, of course, Matthew, again, son of a doctor, not really comfortable with this life as a country squire at first. He didn't really understand it. And I'm going to get into that here in a second. You see problems in this estate. But Grantham says, I see my life's work. I look at this house. I look at the estate as I walk around. And I see my life's work. And Southerners viewed their own plantations that way. I mean, Nathaniel Macon viewed his plantation as his country. Thomas Jefferson called Virginia's country, but really that country didn't go beyond eye level with his mountains. That was his country. Monticello was his country. George Washington with Mount Vernon. James Madison with Montpelier. So it was their country to have these. Calhoun with Fort Hill. These were their countries. This estate was everything. Their lives stopped at the border of their land. And so as Southerners acquired more land, that was the point. It was a recreation of this English country life that Downton Abbey really does a nice job portraying. There was another interesting conversation in this first season with Matthew again. And Matthew was bristling at the valet that he was assigned. A man that would dress him, choose his clothing. And Matthew kept, I'll pick my own clothing. I'll dress myself. And the valet didn't really care for this. He was serving as a valet and a butler to Matthew and his mother. And he couldn't understand why this young whippersnapper wouldn't want the courtesy of having a servant like this. And Matthew, of course, I'm a son of a doctor. I'm middle class. I don't need all this stuff. I don't need to have the trappings of aristocracy. I don't need it. And he complains, he's riding a bike, and he's not even having, anyone drive him or anything. And so he complains to Lord Grantham about this. He says, I'm just going to let my valet go. You think that you could find something else for him? And Grantham stops him, and he says, very, very fatherly. This is, again, paternalistic, very fatherly. He stops Matthew, and he says, And I think Matthew made the statement that a grown man doing this stuff was kind of silly. He was minimizing. Of course, the valet, his name was Mosley, was much older than Matthew. And Matthew thought, this is just silly. This grown man can't find something else to do. Why? His whole life. I mean, he's just waited on people. And so Grantham stops him. And he says, wait a second here. Who are you to minimize the life work of another man? This is what gives him value. When you take over this estate, are you going to let all of the staff go? Are you going to let, what about the maids? What are they going to do? What about the butler? What is he going to do? What are all these people going to do? We provide a life for these people. What about the people in the community? Are you going to sell everything off? Are these people never going to have a role again? And who are you to minimize their life's work? This is what they do. Who are you to take that away from them? In other words, and I found that conversation to be so interesting because, again, it's the paternalism of this traditional order of English society, which found its way into America and held on longer in the South than anywhere else. Even when you look at, and of course, in Downton Abbey, you had Lord Grantham was married to an American, and the American was from New York, and they had acquired their money. They were kind of old money, but more, I mean, the English looked at them as new money, and they lived a different kind of life. Their lifestyle was much more flashy. It wasn't as traditional. And so that new money in America, you had this contrast between old and new money several times in the show. In fact, the oldest daughter was engaged to a man with new money at one point, an Englishman with new money. He was a newspaperman. And so you had this contrast at times. And you had that also in America. You had Southerners who saw themselves as old money, who viewed their life differently than those who had new money. And in fact, when you get to the colonial period, you look at how Southerners would often, criticize Northerners and vice versa for their lifestyles. If you go back to the Philadelphia Convention, this was discussed over and over again. We have Southerners that live a different way than us. People didn't understand from the North when John Randolph would come in his hunting boots with his dogs into the Congress because he was an English countryman. I mean, that's basically what he was. And you look at Downton Abbey and you look at their activities. It was hunting. It was shooting. And they talked about this a lot. It was fishing. It was the sport of the upper class was these type of activities. Hunting, fishing, shooting. And if you didn't go shooting, there was something wrong with you. They actually measured if a man was a real man, if he could go shooting, if he could ride a horse properly, if he could go on the hunt. This is how they measured the value of a man. Did he fit into the society? Could he do these things? It wasn't just about your money. It was about could you act in the proper way when it came to the sport of the upper class. These people didn't go out and engage in racing. They did play cricket, and they had an annual cricket event where they had the town against the estate, and the estate had the servants as part of the team. So again, here's that paternalism. They weren't part of the town team. They were part of the team for the estate. And so they were part of the family. I mean, it's interesting how that worked out. And I think that you would find that, again, this paternalistic attitude, you'd find it in the South in ways that most people couldn't understand. And when you go back and you read enough Southern history, you see this stuff. Now, again, you have different views. The servants didn't always view themselves that way. The slaves didn't always view themselves that way. But the masters of the estate certainly did. One of the other themes that you had, of course, is upward mobility in England. Was there amount of upward mobility? And you had a fairly scandalous situation in the show between the driver, the chauffeur, and one of the daughters. So there's a romance, a budding romance there. And I'm not going to get into what happens, but it deals with this issue of upward mobility. And of course, one of the other things is this chauffeur is also a socialist. And so you have the socialists starting to chip away overall, not in this particular household, but they start to chip away at the view of the aristocracy. And of course, you have women's rights and all these other kinds. They bring in all these social issues into the show, and they do a wonderful job with it because the show is not overtly anti-aristocracy. And it's not overtly pro-social reform. They balance both out. And I think that's an interesting part of the show. You don't walk away from it feeling like, man, these people, they just bash the aristocracy. It's all about how bad the aristocracy is. They do make fun of Americans, which I find great. And so I love that part of it, making fun of Americans. Because Americans, in many ways, and wealthy Americans, particularly in this time period, were rather disgusting in the way that they showed their money. And, of course, these are Northern Americans, which I find even more fun. Because, Southerners are not part of this new money that's often criticized. In fact, when you go back and look at Southern history, they would have acted very much like these individuals from Downton Abbey. So you have these themes. And then one of the other themes is the erosion of these estates after World War I. I think we take for granted, we're now in the centennial of World War I. We're right at the point where that's going to start wrapping up within the next year. And we take for granted the impact that particular war had on this particular type of social environment all over the world. World War I did much to bring down the aristocracy. And part of that was because the aristocracy was viewed as a cause of the war. It was viewed as a problem. It was viewed as the thing that brought this great big war about. Remember, World War I was a big family squabble. King George and the Tsar and the Kaiser were all related. The English aristocracy were, in fact, German. And so they're all related. And at the end of the day, because of the carnage of the war, because of the influence of the commoner and fighting on the front lines, you had a lessening of these social dynamics and the social dichotomy between upper class and lower class in England. You started seeing that wear down over time. And so these estates are being sold off. People, these large landowners are going bankrupt. They just can't afford it. The entire lifestyle that they had supported them, it's all fading away. A lot of that also had to do with the changing economy. Foreign imports. It was not as economically viable to have your tenant farmers anymore and to have your small farms. You started having large commercial farming operations, which started producing the climate which would end the necessity for these tenant farmers. And so all of that, and get into tenant farmers and how these people are losing their livelihoods. It's an interesting show. Now, I will talk about manners in it, and I think this is one thing that is lasting. And one thing that I think people that have watched the show and anyone that that I've read about the show, I haven't really talked to a whole lot of people who have watched the show, but the manners of the show and the manners of England at this time, it's refreshing. You walk away from that particular show and you think to yourself, gosh, if people could just act like this today, if we had these type of manners in modern society, how much nicer society would be. And it didn't mean that people didn't do awful things, because they did. It didn't mean people weren't rude to each other, because they were at times. But that formality of the manners actually served a purpose. And that was not just to have a social caste system, but to create an environment of respect. And I watch, you go around in modern society, there's no respect for anybody or anything anymore. One of the things that the South had always been known for was its manners. And that is quickly fading in the South. And part of that, of course, is this view of democracy. Everyone's equal. You don't have to show anybody respect. I am, it's the vive yo. I am who I am. Listen to me. Long live me. And there's no deference. There's no respect. You see it all the time in interactions on social media. And of course, being snarky on Twitter is something that makes Twitter go. But not just that. People think that they can just call you all kinds of names, or they show you no respect. And so the manners of Downton Abbey are something that really draw you in. And I think that's one thing that people really enjoy about the show. You're taken away to another place, to another time, where manners were actually important, where people actually had respect for each other, and you didn't have all of the breakdown of these type of traditional roles between male and female, man and man. I mean, how men interacted with each other, how men and women interacted with each other. It was refreshing to watch a show like this, and you go and you see how people do these things now. It really turns you off. It turns your stomach in a lot of ways. If you watch this and you get that sense for longing for a time when manners were important. And that was the way, of course, in the South, for a long period of time, up until really the last, say, 30 years. And I think one of the things you see in modern American society is the breakdown of manners. We've seen it with the Judge Kavanaugh fiasco and how people interacted, just the spite and the nastiness of the left and what they do to people now, how the left conducts itself. There's no manners. There's no respect. And that's probably the most disgusting thing about it, and what turns people off the most. Americans, for all of their talk of egalitarianism, everyone's equal, they still, particularly, I would say that people on the right more, they still want manners. They still want people to show other people respect. And I think that, this was one of the critiques of perhaps, and this is one of the reasons why I think that they chose to have a prosecutor come in to show even Dr. Ford respect. People wanted all the individuals in that particular situation to be treated with respect, and not everyone was. And I mean, it's one thing that people said about Trump. He didn't treat Dr. Ford with respect at one point. And I think he was just, he was fighting back against and using the left tactics against themselves. And unfortunately, he had two individuals, Ford and Kavanaugh, drawn into that. The lack of respect was across the board in many cases, but not just that, particularly when it came to Kavanaugh. So that's one thing I really enjoyed about Downton Abbey was the manners. But there are so many other parts of the show. It's six seasons. The shows are, you know, about an hour long. There's only eight or nine of them in each season. So it's an easy binge watch season series. And so I would highly recommend you watch it. And watch it with this in mind. The historical value of tradition, the historical value of these relationships between people, and, you know, relating back to American history and how Americans, in many ways, particularly in the South, were part of this traditional English country lifestyle. And I think that's, I watched it over and over again and said, you can make this in America. Now, they are going to make this in America, but they're going to do it with the Gilded Age, and I'm sure it's going to be dramatically different. The manners and customs and these type of things will not be the same, but they have, the producers of Downton Abbey are producing an American version. I think it's called Gilded Age or something like that. And it's going to be out, I think, next year. So I'll be watching that too. But this show, tremendous, tremendous show. Well worth your time to watch it. So don't forget to get that new McClanahan Academy course on American Constitutions. It does get into a lot of detail on traditions. And I'll see you next time on the Brian McClanahan Show.